Hello and welcome to the Tech and Trees podcast. I've started to dive a bit more into the deep tech space and what it takes to build such a venture. Last time I tried to cover how to start a biotech venture as a business guy. Well, this time I approach a topic from the other side. I want to understand how a deep tech business is run on the science side. My guest is Lea Besser, co-founder and chief scientific officer at De Novo Food Labs. De Novo Food Labs is researching novel proteins and is about to launch its first product this year. It's highly secret and I cannot say too much, but yeah, Lea gave me some insights. I tried to understand what are the key metrics and schedules that the scientists stick to and how to align the business with the scientific operations. It was relieving for me to hear that Lea is very happy about having her business-oriented co-founder on board. Enjoy.
Welcome to Tech and Trees.
Lea, hi.
Hey.
Thank you so much for taking the time to talk to me. I'm excited for this. How are you doing today?
Yeah, good. We could have better weather for you, but it is what it is.
It is what it is, and we'll make the best of it. How would your mom describe you?
I actually did my homework on this one and I actually asked her. So my mom said, the first word she said was determined, which was followed very swiftly by almost like a bull in a china shop. So context for that, I sort of get ideas in my head and I just like, there's nothing that stops me from doing it. And so like, if I get a thought and I want to do it, I just do it. So my mom calls me a doer, which is, I'd say, pretty accurate. And that's probably why I lean towards entrepreneurship and startup. I think the chaos and the chaotic nature of it all sort of suits my personality. That's what, and among other things that mothers say, like, you're kind and thoughtful and that sort of stuff. But
it's nice to hear something positive from your mom once in a while, I guess.
I know.
It's good to ask.
Yeah.
I'm interested, like, when you met me, or when you meet people generally, what do you pay attention to?
That's an interesting question. I think a couple of things. For me, I like it when people are engaging and they ask questions and it's more of a conversation. Sometimes you meet people and they speak a lot about themselves. So I sort of look out for, let's just say, like a two-way street conversation. I also like it when there's a bit of banter. I think it's cool when you get to see people's personality and they're not so reserved. And I guess small talk, I'm really not a fan of small talk, even though I brought up the weather first, but you know.
Cutting to the chase.
Yeah, exactly.
Right away.
Yeah.
Okay. As you lean towards entrepreneurship, I'm wondering, you know, some people are in it for the money, some people are in it for a purpose, whatever that may be. What is your definition of success?
I have two versions of success. So for me, what's important is like building a life that I am proud of, like according to my own version of that. So I think success is very much like building a career and a path that is of value and to my values and not compromising on that. So I think that's really important. And I basically at the end of my life, I want to be happy with what I've done and I want it to be like for me. I don't want to live a life for someone else.
It's wonderful.
Yeah, it's different.
What's the thing then that you consider to be overrated?
Tourist attractions, I think, are overrated.
Don't make me feel bad.
No, I think you can see a city more beautifully without going to, although Cape Town has a lot of very cool things, so you can't go wrong. I think, what else? Electricity. Maybe that's just a coping mechanism. And working from home is overrated, yeah.
So you're looking for team culture, building it in the workplace.
Yeah, I think innovation is born, like, collaboratively.
Yeah, okay, fair enough. And last but not least, what is the thought about Africa that people need to leave behind?
Sure. I think there's quite a few. But I think my main thing is that Africa needs handouts. I think we need equal opportunity and like capital. because we have a lot of innovation and a lot of like skills and expertise and just a lot of everything. And I think we can, and we do play on a global scale just as effectively. People just need to see Africa as equal.
Yeah, I love it. Talking about innovation. That's yeah. exactly what we're here today to talk about. And I told you before we started that I have a business background, so I usually understand what the business side of building a startup entails. I have absolutely no idea how to build it from the scientific point of view. And you have a science background, so I would like to talk to you about how it's like, what it's like to build a startup as the person, as the tech person in the team, basically. Well, at least the person who understands the product at a lot deeper level. So I hope that you can walk me through that a little bit. And first of all, maybe let's talk about the company that you have co-founded that you're running, the Novo Food Labs. Do you mind just like giving me the rundown? What are you doing?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I think that's a great question. So yeah, De Novo Food Labs is a company, a biotech company, and we're using a technology called precision fermentation to produce high value, scarce animal proteins. So we are currently producing a protein called lactoferrin, which is really expensive to purify out of milk because it's available in such low concentrations. So using the technology, we can actually produce it at a higher concentration, inevitably making it cheaper and more accessible. So maybe just also some context on precision fermentation. So it's basically where you insert a gene for your protein that you want to create. So you insert that into yeast. So it's a genetically modified organism. And then you ferment it much like you would beer. And then instead of producing alcohol, it produces the protein of interest. So our protein being lactoferrin. So it's a very, very powerful technology. So you can produce nature identical proteins, and in this case, nature-identical animal proteins, which means you can make them vegan, which is awesome. And we're a founding team of four. So it's two scientists, myself and Joni, and then an engineer and a business person. And so we have quite a technical team, but we're very, very grateful for the business brain because it is quite a marriage to sort of get the business and the science to work together. You know, business obviously has very tight timelines in terms of like funding cycles and expectations. And science obviously has long lead times in terms of development, especially when you're starting something from scratch, sort of from an innovation point of view. So I think in terms of that, speaking from the scientific point of view, it's very important to build like realistic milestones. So understanding your technology really well is important because there's a lot of hurdles you need to overcome and a lot of unknowns. So you really need to build those milestones and expectations correctly because that is essentially how you raise funding, as you would know. And so you need to meet those milestones and your science actually has to achieve things in order for you to sort of carry on with your funding. So it's quite an interesting space in that you have the opportunity to also create value in your IP. So there's also sort of like a, say, a price tag on that as opposed to just a tangible product. So there's a lot of cool things that you can do using biotech as a vehicle to create a business. But it is tricky. It's different. It's yeah.
Before we dive deep into that, I have to tell you that it's very soothing for me to hear that a business person can actually add value, because you don't know through how many crises I've already gone, basically questioning everything I've done in the past and being like, oh God, I'm such a useless human being.
Technical people need business people for sure. We're very, very grateful for Jean, and just sort of like herding cats sometimes.
Sounds good. I think one important question to follow up with when I ask you what do you do is, why do you do it?
I mean, that's a very good question. I have two reasons for doing what I do. I think my main reason is that I want to create impact. And for me, my version of impact is having a sustainable change in the food system. That's really, really important for me. So that's linked to both sustainability and ethical farming, which is largely why we're focusing on animal proteins initially. And the other reason why I do what I do in terms of starting a company is I don't want to work for anyone else. I think you can't do things differently if you're doing it for someone else.
Then you're already like saying, okay, you don't want to work for anyone else. And, well, you want to have a sustainable change in the food system. So let's talk about how you intend to do that. To the extent that you're allowed to tell me.
Okay, that's
what,
fair.
What direction is your product going to take?
So we're starting with animal protein, so dairy proteins. As it stands, livestock is one of the biggest drains on the agricultural food system. So it's really important to alleviate that. And our role in that is to alleviate some of the very scarce proteins, because you need huge volumes of milk just to produce a small quantity of the protein. And we can basically do that using our technology, so that you don't have to farm cows and produce milk at that literage just for those proteins. And thereby you can reduce a lot of the impact. I think it's also important to realize that, you know, animal proteins are really important in terms of functionality. So the protein we're working on is not just important from an amino acid profile. So, you know, you get plant proteins and you get animal proteins, and everyone says it's, you know, better because of the amino acid profile. But we're also focusing on bioactive proteins, in that the way that they fold and they function in your body has such an important impact, in that it actually binds to certain things and transports nutrients correctly. So as much as we can move to a more plant-based diet, there are certain elements of proteins in the animals that are really critical. And so you can't just move away from animal protein unless you have a technology like this where you can recreate it. So we're basically unlocking that pathway to moving away from animal agriculture by still bringing animal proteins into the food system just without animals.
So what would be the effective changes to the food system that your product would unlock?
You could pretty much stop farming animals for animal protein. You could use our technology instead. So that's where the power lies. In that way, you don't have to farm all the crop agriculture for animals. You don't have to damage the greenhouse gas emissions and all that sort of stuff. And I think, aside from sustainability, what it also does for humans is that it makes these very scarce proteins that are so important more accessible, because it's unaffordable for a lot of people. Just for an example, this protein is supposed to be in infant formula, but it's so expensive, so you only find it in premium infant formula. So this protein is not actually available to a lot of infants, but it's important for cognitive development, immunity, and all these really important developmental functions in babies. And they're just not getting it because it's too expensive. So you can also bring accessibility to these nutrients, which is also very cool.
Yeah. Can you then paint a picture for me? What kind of vision do you pursue? And let's talk about this year, maybe. What are the milestones that are coming up for you this year?
Cool. We actually have a very big year this year. So yeah, it's very exciting.
Good timing.
Yeah, great timing, actually. So we've got our protein that we're producing, and we're scaling it up this year. So that we can basically go through regulations and show that it's safe. At the same time, we're also building a brand, and we're going to release a product in the UK early next year. So this year is all the development, branding, finalizing, and marketing of that, so that we can launch next year. And that allows us to build a pipeline for our protein into the market. So it's a very big year for us. We're also growing quite a bit. We're now a team of 9. Soon to be 10, predominantly scientists, which is cool. But we're also growing more on the commercial side as well. So we're bringing in some marketing people as well. So it's cool to see the company grow in different facets. So it's a pretty big year for us.
Okay, sounds great. Yeah. I would now like to go a bit into, well, building a business from the science perspective, right? And I know how you can start a business by, well, brainstorming and iterating through different business models, taking them to different markets, whatsoever, right? But how did the idea for your company come about from the scientific point of view? How do you scientifically iterate through different concepts and then think, oh, this might be a business?
Sure. I mean, there's lots of different ways for that to happen. I think for us, we initially wanted to produce animal proteins, specifically dairy proteins without animals. And so we looked at, you know, how can you do that? This technology was one of the most powerful ones, in that it's very powerful and that you can replicate it identically, but this technology is currently used in pharmaceutical industries to produce things like insulin, for example. So the advantage of that is that this technology is scaled, which means you don't need to then also scale it. Like some other technologies, for example, like cell cultured meat, you still then need to scale it. So the advantage is that we can develop the core technology, but the commercial aspect is already available, which is, I think, a very important factor because it does reduce your time to market. And therefore you can actually achieve that impact a lot faster. And then from there, you then need to choose, you know, what host you're going to use. So we're working with a yeast host, but I mean, you could have used bacteria, filamentous fungi, like, so there's a lot of considerations, algae even. And so then you start like comparing. So you basically do a feasibility study, like which ones are going to create what you want. And then business brain comes in, you know, like at what volumes can you produce it at so it becomes commercially viable, what technology can scale faster. So there's a bit of a initial feasibility study. And then you can go, cool, this is what we're going to do. And then you just, you hit the lab and you hire people and you just iterate on your technology. I mean, that's just normal experimental design, a lot of brainstorming, a lot of creativity, actually. We actually moved in and out of a lot of different approaches. We've started producing whey protein, but it was just, it's still quite a cheap protein, so the technology is not the best fit for it just yet. So that's why we moved to high value, expensive proteins, and then saw the impact.
To be cost competitive with your product, or?
Yeah, so we can enter the market comparatively to what's currently being sold, which is important because, like, if you look at a lot of the research, while sustainability is an important factor for purchasing, cost is still one of the primary reasons people buy things. So if things are going to be at a premium the whole time, people aren't going to buy it, and then you're just not going to reach critical mass and not have an impact, which is what's very important for us. So a lot of, in the beginning, it's just a lot of feasibility studies comparing like what the science can do and what makes commercial business sense.
Yeah.
So you guys are very, very useful in
even science. In the early stages. Even the early stages. Oh,
100%.
Then I'd like to ask you about the earliest of stages and basically the very beginning, picking an idea. So you yourself, you said you're entrepreneurially driven. Oh my God. So I'd like to know, okay, what excites you about an idea? What does a technology need to excite you, you know? Or like if it makes easier to think about it, like imagine I'm a business guy and I want to recruit you as my technical co-founder. Yeah. Like, what does the idea need to excite you to be like, okay, yes, let's do this?
For me personally, and I can't speak for all my co-founders, but for myself, what a technology needs to have is an element of difference and innovation. Like, there needs to be enough knowns, but also a lot of unknowns that you can figure out. It needs to be feasible, but like just like bordering on the impossibility that no one's done it just yet, because there's something very exciting about being on the forefront of something. And it's not to say that this technology is brand new. Like I said, the pharmaceutical industry uses it to produce drug compounds and stuff. But like what we're doing and our approach is really different. And that's really what's exciting for me. And that's what's exciting about using these sorts of technologies, is that you can really create something that's nature identical, but enhance a lot of its functionality. And that really opens the doors for a lot of possibilities. And although this protein exists from cows, it's like we haven't even scratched the surface on what we can do with it. And that's what's really exciting. It's just the open sense of possibility that you can bring to the table. That excites me.
When you started out, what were the knowns and what unknowns are you currently trying to, you know, uncover?
So the knowns were that this technology can produce nature identical proteins. The knowns were that the pharmaceutical industry has scaled it, so it's doable. The unknowns were that no one had done this with this protein, no one had scaled it, and no one had really unlocked, and still no one has really unlocked the potential of this protein. And that's what's really exciting. So we've done quite a cool like internal study where we've really explored some of our theories, and we've received like amazing feedback, and even more than we had expected. And that those are some of the unknowns that we're exploring, and that's what's really exciting. So in terms of what it can do in the human body is quite remarkable from a functional nutrition point of view.
Yeah. I have to ask now about the product development phase, because, you know, a lot of, so I've worked for an impact VC for 2 years, and I've looked at a lot of software businesses, right? And when you build a software business, you get a lot of feedback constantly. You can put out something very, very scrappy right after the first week, basically, and get people's feedback and iterate on that. With a biotech product, it doesn't work that way, right? Like, you can spend years in R&D without getting like outside feedback, or like if the product would be well received by a potential customer, right? So like, what does the conception and development of a biotech product look like in that sense? You know what I mean?
That's a very good question, actually. And I think a lot of companies do almost like try and perfect their technology before taking it to consumers. But I think personally, I don't think that's the right approach. I think you always need to have your consumer in mind, even from the beginning. And that way you will develop a product that solves their problem. So you always have to have the consumer in mind. So even if you're a biotech company and you may be 2-3 years out, you still need to know what your consumer wants. And there are ways to do that. And that's like, so I think what's really cool about our team, because we have 4 co-founders and we have very different backgrounds. So although we have 2 scientists, Joni is very much more on the molecular side. I did food science. I did a lot of like consumer research as well. So as we're going through this, we have an online platform where we're doing a lot of consumer research so that we're testing our assumptions the whole time. And so you can actually understand what your market wants even before your product's ready. It's just a matter of, I guess, asking the right questions and just keeping in mind who your end consumer is and making sure that you're still solving their problem when you're doing your R&D. So you can do it at the same time. It's just a little bit different and you have to be creative in your approach.
Yeah. What are the right questions to ask, or what are mistakes you can make while asking questions?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I think when you ask questions to consumers, you can often lead them. And so you can ask a question like, for example, do you think it's rainy today? And it's like, yes, it's rainy. You can see it's rainy. But you can also ask some other questions that maybe answer a question that you actually want. So you can ask very leading questions and get a yes or a no, but you won't necessarily know why or the driving forces behind those decisions. And that's really what you want to understand. You want to understand the problem, because you can solve a problem in many different ways, and you need to make sure that the solution that you're creating is actually solving that problem, and it's, you're not trying to find a problem for your solution, which is often what happens when you're a technology company, is that you have this great technology and now you need to find someone to buy it. And so if you ask someone, do you want a vegan animal protein, they would say yes, because that sounds great, right? But you're not really asking what the problem is. And that is like, are they sustainability driven? Are they, you know, looking for something from a nutritional point of view? Like, you really need to understand that core issue and not just try and validate your assumptions.
Can you tell me about a moment during your product development when, well, you were gathering insights from your questions and you had like an aha moment, and maybe what question that was related to?
Yeah. I mean, this is actually why we're working on the protein we're working on. So like I said, we were working on whey protein originally, and the research is out there that people want more sustainable proteins, right? And like, plant-based is not what people want because, you know, texture, blah, 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 blah. So that information is there, and you can ask people all the time and you'll get that answer. And then we started asking other questions, and that's where the price came in. Eventually, like, people were like, we won't pay a premium, but like a huge premium for this protein. And then it was like, this technology is not our go-to-market protein, because this technology is not ready yet to produce it at an affordable cost. And that's when we started really asking more core questions as to what people were looking for. And that is where we came to this protein. And then speaking to industry partners as well, which is also really important, because they get a lot of insight into end consumers and understanding even their problems from like a processing point of view. manufacturing, sourcing. And that was where we were like, wow, this technology can actually solve these core issues that people are having. And that's where we pivoted into lactoferrin. So asking questions repeatedly and really understanding what the problem is can actually fundamentally change the trajectory of your business, actually.
I wonder a bit, you know, for this product development process, you're in a lab, you're working on a protein, you get this insight, you switch to a different protein, maybe you have even now a totally different consumer in mind. Like, how do you communicate these kind of changes, like, with your co-founders overall? You know, like, you have people with different skill sets. How do you make sure that you're all aligned? What kind of techniques do you use for that? You know what I mean?
Sure. That's quite interesting. Well, I think because we're still quite a small team and we have quite an open conversation with everyone, everyone's always in the conversation from the beginning or when these pivotal moments come in. And so I guess the reasoning for a lot of the changes is quite evident. You know, the discussion is also always like, does this make business sense and does this make science sense and is it feasible? So like everyone is brought in with their level of expertise and weighs in as to whether it is possible or even like in terms of timelines, is it something we can do in X amount of time? And actually even our investors often get brought in terms of like, you know, what do they think about this from an investment thesis? So there's a lot of considerations when we make these decisions. And I guess it's just about open dialogue.
Yeah.
Hearing everyone's opinions and weighing it up and communicating.
How do you like establish milestones and identify priorities?
Yeah. Once again, balance between business and science. The scientists, the science team basically usually comes up with what we can develop in a certain amount of time to hit, let's just say, commercially feasible objectives for the business. The business team will be like, can we halve that, please, in terms of timelines?
Can we have it better and faster, please? Yeah, that would be great.
Yeah, and then we sort of allocate resources and try and figure out how we can make it go faster or better or smoother or whatever the case is. But yeah, usually it's like the business team would be like, this is what we need to achieve, and the scientists build a pipeline to achieve that. That's typically how we do it. It's worked thus far.
Okay. Thus far, I hope it works a little bit further as well.
Yeah, for sure.
I'm also curious, you know, like with a lot of biotech products, the impact overall, the sustainability impact is kind of controversial as it is with cultivated meat, for example, right? Like how do you account for like the potential sustainability impact of a science heavy product during the development phase? Or are you mainly geared to just like developing this technology further and see where it can be taken in the future, for example?
Yeah. So, I mean, R&D is typically pretty resource intensive in terms of, yeah, you're doing things on very small scales and you're not necessarily using commercially available options for your R&D. I would say the big distinction between our technology and cultivated meat is that we still don't have any animal products in our R&D process. So from that point of view, we don't have that sustainable ethical conundrum, luckily. You know, and our technology can once again scale. The benefit of doing this technology from the ground up is that you can build the pipeline for your manufacturing to also have, you know, sustainable you know, energy sources and that sort of stuff. So that is the benefit. Also, I think what's important is that you consider like what you're replacing and whether it actually will make the impact that you want to have. And that's sort of, I think, why it's important to do like a life cycle analysis very early on, which we have done, and sort of that can project the impact you can have instead of just having these assumptions and then you get there and you actually don't have make that impact. So I think all those sorts of things need to be validated really early on. But once again, I think it's important to also understand the kind of technology you're working with. And I think, yeah, precision fermentation and cultivated meat have separate issues. I would say sustainability in the R&D phase is not our primary challenge, like cultivated meat.
What are the primary challenges?
Sure. That's a fair question, but I would say amongst them, it's not sustainability and it's not ethical, which is sort of why we started the company. I think our primary challenge is just getting to market at a reasonable time. You know, the investment landscape, especially from a VC perspective, has, you know, certain time horizons, and it's just speed to market and getting that technology to work fast enough so that you can scale it and get it to production and get it to market. So I would say that's probably a challenge that every technology has across the board. But I'd say that's the one that keeps us up at night as founders. So we're just pushing to get it to market as quick as possible.
Yeah, makes sense. As you're talking about the main challenge of time to market, and how you think about it scientifically and how can we achieve that, you know, I'm wondering about, you know, for a lot of different technologies, be it cultivated meat, be that carbon removal, be that precision fermentation, whatsoever, you know, that there's always this discourse that say, okay, in 3 years, we can halve the price of the product. In 5 years, we can go even further and so on and so forth, you know. So I sometimes wonder, okay, what's the science magic behind that? You know, like how do you, apart from just scaling up and being able to, you know, produce at cheaper prices overall, like, what are the different variables that you can tweak on the science side to, A, for example, shorten time to market, but also drive pricing down?
Yeah, that's actually a really cool question. So you can go to market with a host that is, say, like your minimum viable product, basically. And that's your host, which in our case is yeast, that has been optimized to a point where you can at least, you know, make it economically viable to scale. But there's still a lot you can do with that host in terms of like modifying it and improving the mechanisms of producing this protein. Like there's almost like endless things you can do to it. And then on top of that, there's other organisms that we're looking at as well that take longer to develop, but have the opportunity of producing much higher protein. So that's sort of our next generation host that's already in development. That we can slot in at the next stage of production, which would produce protein at much higher concentrations, which will inevitably drive the cost down. So there's a lot you can do from sort of, let's just say, a genetic engineering point of view to improve that. And that's where the pipeline of cost reduction is really, really cool.
Yeah. So running the risk that I won't understand what you're talking about, you said there are endless things you could do to the host yeast in your case. So can you give me an example? What are the things that you can do? As you said, okay, genetic engineering might be involved. So
yeah, that's true. Yeah, endless. Okay, so
just like one or two examples, you know?
Yeah, okay. So basically our host secretes the protein, so it pushes it out of the cell into solution. And so you can do a lot in terms of improving the pathway of secreting the protein so that the protein doesn't stay in the actual cell. So there's a lot you can do from that point of view in terms of pushing it out. There's a lot you can do in terms of like reducing certain pathways in the yeast that would typically design or they have innately for survival or whatever, and you can switch some of those metabolic pathways off and put in other metabolic pathways to produce more protein. So there's always a trade-off in nature. It's like if you do one thing, then it's going to lead to that. So I guess you have to prioritize what it is you want. And for us, it's protein production, and then also like correct folding of the protein, which allows it to function correctly. So there's a lot you can do from an engineering point of view, just from simple host development, where you can use the current genetics and just switch on certain genes and switch off other genes that will allow it to not do one thing and then preferably do another. And then you can also insert genes to also make it produce more protein.
Okay.
Yeah. I can't give you much more than that. It gets
no, got it.
Gets nitty-gritty.
Got it. No, it's good for me to, you know, at least touch it on the surface.
Yeah.
I wonder a bit on that, you know, again, I would be able to hire someone for a marketing role or so, you know, like I would be able what to look for, you know, what kind of skills, how I can test that in an interview or in a case study, whatever. How do you go about, well, the hiring of science talent?
It's actually, it's a really interesting question because I think that the skills you can almost, you almost know what sort of skills you need. And it's pretty easy to validate that, you know, cross-reference, get them to come into the lab, do analytical stuff. I think it's relatively easy to test that. I think what's really difficult to test specifically with scientists is innovation and thinking out of the box and thinking creatively and problem solving. Like those are, like those things are really rare to find. And that is really hard to hire. You know, you can sort of bring in some questions in the interview process, which we have, and sort of asking pretty vague questions around like problems and trying to understand how they think about it and how they would go about problem solving. It's always interesting to see like what thought process goes into how you would solve a problem, even if it's a like seemingly unsolvable problem. It's just the thought process and how you go about doing that. And that's really hard to find because that's not something you'd find on a CV or on a LinkedIn profile. And that's really what we want, is those people that think differently, think big, think creatively, solve problems in a completely unique way. Because if you keep solving the problems in the same way, you're just going to get the same outcome, which is not what we want. So it's tricky.
How do you try to test for that, for this capacity to innovate?
We ask questions. So we pose a couple of problems that are typically quite technical. And the answer is not like X or Y. It's more explain to us how you would go about doing this or how you would solve this or what do you think the problem is. And what we really want to ascertain is the thought process and the mindset behind solving the problems. And that's sort of, it's indicative. I mean, it's something you only really find out when you work with the person. But we like also going on what we call a vibe check. We always, when we interview, the first interview is really just getting a feel for the person, which sounds like it's not important, but it's in a startup where you're innovating and you're working in a culture of collaboration. It's so important to really have a good energy. And our company has such a good energy, and that's something we want to keep. And that, I think, also inspires like creativity and thought process and innovation. And that's also really important to us.
The first hire you make, I like to see it that way, is your co-founder or your co-founders, right? So do you have a recommendation once I go out there looking for my own, you know, partner in crime? How do I make sure that we're like aligned, that we vibe, that we have the same kind of vision and so on? Because, you know, like, the way of working is so different. Like, I don't know what the way of working in a lab looks like and so on, you know? So you need not only to be matching on the human level, but also in terms of how you work with each other, and you need to make sure that you can communicate with each other across these boundaries, you know?
Yeah, it's an interesting question. I don't know if I have the answer. I can tell you how we met, and it's not going to give you any indication of how to go forward. But so Jean and myself, we've known each other for years, and we actually started a company before this. So we were working on this, and then we got introduced to Richard and Joni, who were also friends for years, and they started working on this, and they were in Joburg. And we got introduced, and then I flew to Joburg for a family thing, and then I went to go meet them. And we had a coffee, we spoke for 2 hours, and then Jean was like, how are they? Like, what do you think? Like, should we start a company together? And I was like, oh, they're really cool. And he's like, okay, so what did you guys speak about? I was like, we didn't speak about business at all for 2 hours. It was just like, it was just the most comfortable, interesting conversation, and it just felt right. And then like the next week we started the company, and it's worked out. It's the vibe check. I don't know what it works for us. It's not something I can tell you how to do. It's just, I don't know, gut feel is important. It's terrible advice from a scientist.
No, that's fine. That's fine.
It's very unscientific, sorry.
No, I like that. I like that not everything needs a framework, not everything has rules that are set in stone, you know, that it's good to see that different ways of coming together work, you know, like I don't think about finding a co-founder like okay, I put a job description out there, you know, like I just have this feeling that I need to meet another person that needs to need to be a match, and I don't need to, though, tick a lot of boxes.
Yeah, look, I don't know, everyone does it differently. It's just, it's very nuanced. I mean, that's worked really well for us. We're very aligned on a lot of things. I mean, we have differences, but how we solve our conflict is very logical, and we're very lucky. I mean, it's not to say this happens to a lot of people. I think we trust logic, but we also trust our gut a lot, which is sort of what has helped us to build such a great team to this point. And so there's always a little bit of magic in everything, right? And you just gotta hope you can find it.
I've been asking this question way too much, but if you were to write down your, like, imagine I want to start a biotech company as well, yeah, right? And you can write down 3 rules under which I should operate my company to make sure that it runs smoothly. What would those rules be? Don't need to be 3. That was just an example.
Okay, just an example. Okay, I need to think about this.
Thinking about your science perspective here.
Yeah, I think when it comes to like a biotech company, it's like there's a lot to consider. I think it's very important to have good advisors or good scientific minds that you can speak to make sure that you are considering as much as you can with the technology, because it's sometimes tempting to use a technology for something it's not suited for because it's, you know, it's shiny and pretty and you want to use it. So I think it's really important to understand the benefits but also the shortfalls of your technology. And the best way to do that is have like a very good array of scientists or scientific people that you can speak to validate your assumptions. I think that's an important first step. I think an important second step is making sure it makes business sense, because science is very cool, but it's not always going to make commercial sense. So that's also a very important factor. So you need to plug your assumptions into an Excel sheet and see if it actually makes you money at the end of the day. Because there's a difference between academia and business, and you really need it to make sense from a business point of view. And the third one, yeah, team. Team is important. With a biotech company, you need to have the right people on your team. And it's not just skills, it's motivation, it's ambition, it's drive, it's values, it's, because it's not easy, and you need to have people that are, you know, willing to push through the good and the bad times in research. Having a good team is fundamental for sure.
What do the bad times in a lab look like?
Oh man, things go wrong. Things go so wrong. You're doing something and it's, you know, you're producing protein and it's looking good, and the next week it's like this thing's just not producing protein and you don't know why. It's having PMS, so you don't know. So this host is just not working. You need to figure out what the problem is, and you just have to run analysis, and you need to go through all the different tests, and you just have to run through them until you find out what the problem is. And it's not always simple. Sometimes it's not what you think it's going to be. So science is a complicated beast. So that's the bad time. So you're on a high and things are working, and then things just don't work.
Okay.
Or a fundamental piece of equipment stops working, and then you need to go beg at a university for theirs. So there's a lot that goes wrong, but at the end of the day, it's very, very fulfilling.
Okay.
When it goes right.
When it goes right.
Yeah.
That's the best thing about, like, when you're doing something, as long as things are going right, you want to stick,
yes,
to it.
Yeah.
As we're slowly coming to an end, I would like to ask you about the location of South Africa, because I've picked up on this notion that the cost of doing science here, for example, is a lot lower than in Europe or the US, for example, by a factor of 6. That's at least what I read. And I guess there is a bit of a, you know, margin.
It's very accurate, yes.
Here.
Yep.
But you've mentioned earlier, for example, that you're going to bring a product to the UK. And I've also read online that you're thinking about setting up a headquarters in the UK as well, right, in London. So what are factors that would make South Africa a great country to set up a biotech company, right? And what are the factors that make you consider moving to the UK?
Yeah, South Africa is great for a lot of reasons. The cost factor is not to be ignored. It's significantly cheaper to do research here, both because scientists are a lot cheaper. It sounds awful to say cheaper, but it's more affordable to hire scientists here. Lab space here is like significantly cheaper as well. Doing research with universities, and we have really good universities here. The science is incredible. Also much cheaper. We also have a great pipeline to researchers. If you look at America, for example, there's a lot of universities. There's also a lot of companies. And so like, if you're looking for someone, like they can find a job really quickly. Whereas the talent pool here is huge, but the job, let's say exciting job access for scientists is not that exciting. So you do have access to a lot of talent, which is very cool from a company perspective. And also a lot of the benefits of being in South Africa, specifically Cape Town, is you're at a port. So, you know, export, import is pretty easy. I'd say some of the challenges, which is, well, not challenges. Let's just say our market size is not the same as America or Europe, and our buying power is different. And so that's why a lot of the times we look to export markets, because that's where a lot of the consumers are. And it's just easier to have a base in the country that you're going to be servicing, basically. And also, I guess, once again, from an investment point of view, it's, you know, sometimes investors prefer keeping their money in certain headquarters. And that's largely why our company is registered outside of the country. Yeah. So there's a couple of factors, but operating here has a lot of benefits.
Yeah. Does it make sense for you to, or would it make sense generally asking for biotech companies to like outsource research efforts or locate research efforts to South Africa, for example, while having their, let's say, commercial division somewhere abroad where their main markets are?
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. Our research is incredible and it's way more affordable. So I would say like outsourcing your research here, or even just setting up headquarters here is really cool. I guess also depends once again where you are, which is sort of why we're also looking at the UK, or why we're headquartered there is because it's the same time zone. The States is, yeah, very far away. So I guess it also depends on time zone, but from a research perspective, South Africa is awesome. We have lots of cool biotech companies here that, you know, no one really even knows of because they're just operating B2B.
Bringing things to an end, can you give me a good book recommendation?
Does it have to be scientific?
No, it can be anything. Okay.
Well, the book I'm reading at the moment, which I really enjoy, it's an autobiography. It's called Shoe Dog. It's by the founder of Nike. Have you seen it? Have you read it?
Yeah, I read it. But like literally like 2 months ago or something. So.
Okay, well then I can't give you that one. Okay, completely off the wall then, is Shantaram. Have you read that?
No.
Very cool. It's apparently not fiction, but it's a little bit fiction. They actually did a series on it now. Very cool.
What is it about?
It's about an ex-prisoner from Australia that breaks out of prison and then escapes to India and then goes and hides out in the slums and then becomes like a informal... So he's actually a paramedic and then he becomes... like the slum doctor, just because he starts helping. It's just very cool and interesting.
Okay, very good.
Yeah.
Well, in that case.
Only because you took my first recommendation.
Yeah, but it's also a nuisance that like on podcasts that have a kind of business startup spin that everybody recommends some book about, you know,
yeah,
something business-like or so. So I'm also very happy to like spread that reading fiction is not a crime, or like somewhat fiction is also a very good thing to do.
Yeah.
So let's close it with that.
Cool.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Taking the time, and all the best for all the steps going forward.
Yeah, same to you. Thank you.